Well, hello, friends. Mark DiMatteo coming at each of you with a brand new message going out to our Great Questions group. And as always, I trust this finds you well, doing well, having a great day when you pick this up. And it's always a pleasure to be having the opportunity to share a few moments with you and share some information with you. Folks, this is actually message number 28. The title of it is The First Law of Thermodynamics. The First Law of Thermodynamics. And as always, I want to take a quick opportunity to welcome those of you that have joined us. My personal email list continues to grow. So if you have recently become a part of our Great Questions group, we want to welcome you and trust that you'll enjoy these audios and that they'll be profitable to you. And also, just as a reminder for any of you that may not be aware of it, all of my previously broadcast audios are posted at my website or on my website, which is real simple. It's my first and last name, markdematteo.com. And that is markdematteo.com. Okay? So let's get rolling here. And folks, as I mentioned, I actually mentioned this as we were finishing up our last session, that I was going to introduce you to the first law of thermodynamics in this session. And if you will recall, we have already discussed the second law in message 23. So now we're going to talk briefly about the first of these two laws, as it is just as significant and its implications are just as fascinating. Furthermore, it helped shed even more light, additional light, on my studies regarding the origin and operation of atoms, which is the topic we, for those of you that have been following along, we've been discussing in our last several messages. And folks, let me just say this as a little aside too. Even though we've been focusing on atoms, you're going to see that the implications we find from these studies not only will apply to atoms, but they're going to apply to studies on a much more widespread scenario as well, and we're going to see that. So even though we're spending a lot of time, we're building a framework here and setting up these laws, because then, as again, we begin to look at other things, other aspects, which is what I did and I'll be sharing with you all, you'll see how all of these laws continue to illuminate the validity of what was going on. Okay, so let's get back to our little discussion here. The first law could also be called the law of conservation of matter and energy, or simply the law of conservation. Simply put, this law of conservation, as its name implies, states that both matter and energy can be neither created nor destroyed, and therefore, the total amount of matter and energy remain constant. In other words, folks, they are conserved. Though matter may be changed from one state to another, and energy may be converted from one form to another, the actual amount of both that exist in the cosmos does not change. For it is not possible for either matter or energy to arise any more than it is possible for either to be annihilated. Even at the atomic level, where modern science has revealed that matter and energy are essentially equivalent and are also interchangeable, this law still applies. For though we now know that matter may actually be converted into energy and back again, the totality is, once again, conserved. So even at the atomic level, the total amount of matter and energy that exists in our universe neither increases nor decreases. Rather, it remains the same. Now, to bear this out, I'm going to share a couple of quotes on this subject with you folks. The first of these is from the late Dr. Isaac Asimov, and perhaps many of you have heard that name before. Dr. Asimov was both a very prolific writer, wrote a lot of science fiction. He was a highly qualified scientist, and interestingly, he was a self-professed atheist. And I'm going to bring out that point for a specific reason, which I'll get into in a moment here. This is an excerpt, actually, from an article he wrote in June of 1970 for the Smithsonian Journal. The title itself is quite suggestive. And the title is, In the Game of Energy and Thermodynamics, You Can't Even Break Even. So let me give you the quote here. To express all this, and he's talking about, here primarily the first law. To express all this, we can say that energy can be transferred from one place to another or transformed from one form to another, but it can neither be created nor destroyed. We can put it another way. The total quantity of energy in the universe is constant. This law is considered the most powerful and most fundamental generalization about the universe that scientists have ever been able to make. No one knows why energy is conserved, and no one can be completely sure it is truly conserved everywhere in the universe under all conditions. All that anyone can say is that in over a century and a quarter of careful measurement, scientists have never been able to point to a definite violation of energy conservation, either in the familiar everyday surroundings about us, or in the heavens above, or in the atoms within. Okay? Interesting little wrap up there. And I might point out that in the 40 years since, science has still revealed no exceptions to this rule. Remember, too, that even though Dr. Asimov refers specifically to energy, the law applies equally to matter, as we have already mentioned, at the atomic level, they are essentially the same. Isn't that interesting? I would imagine that some of what we've already discussed and revealed about our study of atoms actually kind of bears that out. But anyway, I don't want to get way off track here. Follow my notes, okay? To bear this aspect out a little further, let me give you one more quote from another highly qualified scientist and author, the late Dr. Henry Morris, who for many years was the chair of the engineering department at Virginia Tech, interestingly enough, for those of us here in Virginia, around this the D.C. area. Dr. Morris, interestingly, was a self-professed Christian, okay? This excerpt is taken from a book entitled What is Creation Science?, which he co-authored. And just as a quick but important aside, I also wanted to point out that though both of these men had rather divergent religious views, obviously, as knowledgeable scientists, they were yet still unified when describing the real facts of true science. I am going to return to this topic in a future message, but for now wanted to quickly reemphasize that that is why I chose to begin my Great Questions quest by looking at the objective facts of real, looking at the objective facts that real science has revealed to us is what I'm trying to say, okay? So in other words, folks, it is a common ground, the facts are the facts, okay? And we'll talk about the interpretations of those facts and worldviews later on because I started exploring that a little bit further. But let's get to Dr. Morris's quote now. The totality, and you're going to see a lot of similarity here, but he's going to talk a little bit about the nuclear stuff as well. The totality of matter and energy, according to the law of conservation, is always conserved. Matter can change its state, gas, liquid, or solid, and can become either very dense or very dispersed, but the total mass never changes. Energy can change its form, but never its totality. The only exception in both cases consists of nuclear reactions, wherein mass changes to energy or vice versa, in which case the total amount of mass plus energy is constant. This conservation principle, which is also known as the first law of thermodynamics, is the most universal and best proved laws of science. Okay? In fact, end of quote. Now this is my notes again. Okay, these are all my notes, but my, not a quote from somebody else. In fact, in a sense, it's a generalized quote because it's from what I've learned from all these different people I've read and studied, et cetera, et cetera. And what common sense and common observations tell us. That's what's cool about this. It makes sense. So continuing on here. In fact, I feel like I'm ad-libbing a lot this time, but that's okay. In fact, all scientific measurements ever made to date confirm the validity of not only this first law we are now discussing, but also the second law we've discussed previously. For so far as is known, these two laws, the law of conservation and the law of decay, govern all processes of any sort in the entire known universe. In summary, both laws combined define an overall reality in which we see, now follow me here, quantitative stability and qualitative decline. And that's what the two laws define, decay and stability. Okay, conservation and decay. Significantly, what most of us don't understand are the inevitable and inescapable effects of the continuous operation of these two laws, and in particular, the second law, the law which is also called the law of entropy or decay. To reemphasize this, let me give you another brief quote, this time from an author who is a New Age socialist philosopher by the name of Jeremy Rifkin. So I'm kind of getting people all over the map here to kind of show you that, and he's going to quote two other people. So you're going to kind of see this is real generally known and understood, particularly in the people who think about these types of things. Okay, this is from his book, Entropy, A New World View. Okay, now it's a short quote, but listen to this. Quote, the entropy law will preside as the ruling paradigm over the next period of history. Albert Einstein said it is the premier law of all science. Sir Arthur Eddington referred to it as the supreme metaphysical law of the entire universe. Wow. Folks, those are three rather weighty statements, especially the latter two, which were made by a couple of fairly eminent scientists, okay? Now, maybe all of y'all haven't heard of Arthur Eddington, but I'm sure everyone's heard of Albert Einstein. We actually referred to him in earlier messages, right? But anyway, prominent guys, okay? But why all the hype over a law most of us perhaps have never even heard of, much less concern ourselves with? Folks, it's because those in the know understand the somber and far-reaching implications of its inevitable long-term effect on the whole of the cosmos. To emphasize this, let me quote Dr. Morris again, though Dr. Asimov makes a very similar statement in a video series that I actually have. So personally heard him make it, okay, on the video. Quote, if present processes continue to function into the indefinite future, eventually all energy will become useless, uniform heat energy. I'm going to say that again. Eventually all energy will become useless, uniform heat energy, and all structures will have disintegrated into a maximum disorder. The sun and stars will burn out. All processes will stop and the universe will die an ultimate heat death. It will still exist by the first law, but it will be dead by the second law. Unquote. So folks, the facts are we live in a reality where we have, as I've already said, quantitative stability, quantitative stability, all the stuff, the energy and the matter in the cosmos stays the same, and yet they continually degrade, and little by little, they will become useless. Everything will break down. Where we've talked about that when I first talked about the second law. Okay, now, this is some significant and potent and powerful stuff for us to think about, and I could give you even more and more quotes on this from people, because it's the overall concern, okay? And I know we're going to talk a little bit about it. There's a lot of conjecture as to things winding up on their own and all these different things. But in light of the known law of science, we're going to look at these implications. And let me just say this and wrap up with this. As potentially ominous as these facts indeed are for our eventual collective future, all of us are involved. No one can escape this. The salient fact we want to focus on at this moment is how all these laws impact the possible explanations for the origin and operation of not only atoms, folks, but ultimately everything else that exists in the cosmos. So we will plan on continuing that examination in our next session. We're going to go back to the different proposed models. We are now armed with even an additional law. We're going to take a look at and continue the discussion that we started a couple of messages ago and really hold these models up, not only for the origin of the atoms, but everything else in light of these laws, and really see what's going on and what makes sense. And it's going to really start, I think, folks, I'm telling you what, it totally illuminated my outlook on understanding of all these things. And I think it'll do the same thing for you too. So anyway, always a pleasure chatting with y'all. This is some fun stuff. Look, gang, I'll tell you this. I know some of the science, some of y'all are not into this type of stuff. I know that. I know it can be a little dry and a little bit boring. And if it's new to y'all, it's part of the reason why I love uploading the messages, because you can re-listen to them from time to time. If you just, you know what I mean? Some of y'all are like, no way, man, I'm not. But a lot of that's what I did. I just listened to it. I thought about it. I reflected on it. And it began to make sense. But it has implications, because all of this deals with where we came from. And where we come from determines why we are here. It determines what we are also, and why we're here, what our purpose is, and you know, and ultimately where we're going, which is all these great questions. So anyway, folks, y'all have a great day. We'll look forward to chatting with you next time and continuing this amazing little journey. Okay, take good care. Bye-bye.